Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Scott Gregory, sitting in today for Rich Fisher, and this is the music of guitarist Charlie Hunter. That is Charlie Hunter's solo guitar from his album called Public Domain. That is the old standard called Limehouse Blues. Charlie Hunter will be performing here in Tulsa Saturday night at the wonderful new jazz club in downtown Tulsa called Duet Jazz, located in the Archer Building basement. Charlie Hunter is our guest today. He will be fronting a trio at Duet featuring a vocalist from Tulsa originally named Dara Tucker. We'll hear more about that later. As we speak with Hunter about his adventuresome and long-running career in music, he came on the scene in the Bay Area where he grew up, and his mother had serviced and repaired guitars for a living, and he plays a modified guitar. It's got conventional guitar strings on it and bass guitar strings on it, and sometimes, like in the cut we're hearing now, it sounds like there's two people playing, a guitarist and a bassist. Those are both Charlie Hunter. And we'll hear a bit more of that as we get into our discussion. Hunter is a player who, as I said, came up in the fertile Bay Area jazz scene of the 90s, and therefore he was exposed to and heavily participated in organ combo jazz, hard bop, funk, rap, rock, and so on. The term jazz doesn't really cover everything that Hunter's up to, and he wouldn't want it that way. This is a musician who likes to have a good time, likes the audience to have a good time, and likes to explore music whenever he can, in whatever band he's playing with, in whatever recording session he's participating in. Charlie Hunter is our guest this hour, again playing at Duet, the jazz club in downtown Tulsa, Saturday night, 8 p.m. More information at duetjazz.com. And we spoke recently with Charlie Hunter by phone. Charlie Hunter, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Now, you started as a kid. I read that you got your first guitar at age 12.
Uh-huh.
Your mother would repair and, like, service guitars for a living. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, she did. I mean, I got, oddly enough, my guitar was $7. I remember that. And I went to Subway Guitars in Berkeley, where she repaired guitars and in California, and I lived kind of halfway between two guitar stores. Subway was one, and the other was called Secondhand Guitars. And in Secondhand Guitars, in the little back was a little room, and a guy named Joe Satriani was a guitar teacher back there.
Wow.
So, you know, Berkeley, Oakland, the East Bay was awash in guitar knowledge, not just from Joe, but so many great musicians and guitar players. So it was hard not to learn how to play guitar at that point.
Did your mother have, like, famous clients, other players who, you know, would bring their guitars to her for work?
Yeah. You know, I mean, all the local people for setups and fret jobs and stuff like that. So, you know, there were the Dunbar brothers who were, there was a band called Earthquake you may have heard of back in the day. And that was Robbie and Tommy was in a group called the Rubinews, and those were all kind of local. The Greg Kinn band, like bands like that.
Wow,
and then
yeah.
A lot of the people that were her people, like I think she repaired Brownie McGee's guitar.
Really?
And, okay. Yeah. And, but you know, at that point that was just something I couldn't really care that much about. You know what I mean?
It was as a kid,
like
right?
Her music. Yeah. Her music to me was really annoying. You know, like I didn't want to hear. Why would she have to have Lead Belly and Robert Johnson playing all the time? It was embarrassing.
Right, right. You know? And as a kid,
for a 12-year-old, yeah.
Yeah, that's like the natural inclination that you wouldn't like what your parents were playing.
Exactly. But really, that was the music that was, that's the whole basis of my the foundation of whatever I do is that music. You know, it's a big part of it.
Right. Before you became a part of the Bay Area music scene of the 90s, did you do some work in Paris as a street musician?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I lived in Europe for 3 years. I was a street musician. I lived in Paris and Zurich and, you know, we traveled around anywhere people had money. And that was how I really learned how to play music because, you know, we were playing like 12 hours a day. So that's going to teach you some certain skills, you know.
Right. And you play a modified guitar. For years, you played a, I suppose, unique instrument. Can you describe it?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, it started off as I started off playing guitar and drums and bass when I was younger. And I got into people like Tuck Andrews and Joe Pass, especially as a street musician. I wanted to be as self-sufficient as possible. And I also just liked that vibe of trying to find a good groove. And, you know, I just kind of developed this instrument. Early one was like a 7-string with a low A. And then I got into an 8-string, which was like lower 3 of a bass and the top 5 of a guitar.
Okay. And so like the lower 3 strings
more
like
that.
The lower 3 strings are a bass guitar and then the top 5 are more of a lead guitar string.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of it as lead. I just think of it as like, you know, those are just the tunings, but so if you listen to those Blue Note records, that's kind of the instrument I'm playing on then.
Right. The Blue Note stuff from the 90s at the beginning of your career.
But later, I kind of, it just was hard to make that really work. You know, there was some issues I felt with the intonation and the bass was a little floppy. So, you know, I dropped the highest guitar string, tuned up to F, and that worked for a little while. And then I eventually was just like, wait a minute, this doesn't really suit me so much, you know. So I tuned up to G, and so I had G, C, F, C, F, B flat, D. And essentially, it's like the lower 3 of a bass and the middle 4 of a guitar, but up a minor 3rd. It's just kind of what works for me at the moment.
Right. And did that come to you while you were playing in Europe?
No. It was after because, you know, when I was in Europe, I was just learning. And mostly, I just played 6-string guitar. I played a lot of acoustic bass on the street as well because that was the instrument nobody wanted to play because it's hard to run away from the police with that instrument, you know. And I was not the best guitar player. There was always a guitar player that was better than me. And so, you know, I learned how to do that. But I was always working on the guitar thing. And, you know, I got deep into Tuck Andrews. And then when I came back to the States in about 89, I really got to work on trying to play a 7-string, which was made for me at Subway Guitars, which was just an old bargain basement archtop guitar with an extra A they added for me. And then from there, I just kept working at it.
Now, when you got back from Europe and you sort of entered this fertile Bay Area music scene, who were you playing with then? What was that scene like?
It was great. I have to tell you, in retrospect, you know, you think of the Bay Area as this place. It's this kind of like post-economic apocalyptic place where only very wealthy people and service industry people can afford to live. But at that time, it was not that. It was still a very deep place. I mean, I guess people would call it diversity now. Back then, it was just how we lived there.
Right.
You know, but it was a very culturally deep place with music was really important. And there were so many great musicians. And also at that time, there were people who were our age who could afford to open up clubs. Right. And then people our age who were in their early 20s that would go out to those clubs. So we just had a great, and people afforded to live in the city, you know.
Right.
So there were so many gigs, you know, we didn't know what to do. There were too many gigs to play,
right,
you know, at that point, and such great musicians. And it was a great scene, and I really learned a lot. People that I met there, and also people that I had grown up with, like Dave Ellis and Jay Lane, who are in my group. I've known those guys Dave Ellis since I was 8 years old, and Jay since I was about 14. So, you know, we go way back. And,
right.
And then other people that I met that came into the area, and then there was always that fertile Berkeley High jazz kind of scene and music scene that I went to that high school as well. And, you know, so there was all kinds of stuff, you know.
Yeah. And I was thinking, looking through my own record collection, preparing for this interview, I was remembering this group you were in called TJ Kirk.
Yeah.
Now, this was a group, as I recall, that was pretty much dedicated to the music of Roland Kirk, Thelonious Monk, and James Brown.
Uh-huh.
Now, did that come together in Berkeley around that time or in the Bay Area?
Yeah, it did. It did. And I mean, the only reason we did it was just because the guitar player John Schott and Will Bernard, who played guitar, and myself and Scott Amendola, we lived really close to each other. And we just used to like to hang out all the time. But we never played gigs together. I mean, Scott and I did, you know, but we just loved hanging out. We're just like, oh, man, let's just make a band just so we could play ridiculous music and it'll fail for sure, you know. and I said, well, I got this idea. Let's do this thing called James T. Kirk, where we play the music of James Brown, Thelonious Monk, and Roland Kirk. And we did a couple gigs and it was really fun, you know, and then someone was like, you can't use that name because you'll get sued. So we changed the name, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, Warner Brothers made the mistake of signing us to a couple record deal, and we put out these records, and you know, there was just so much going on.
There were lots of fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. That's interesting. James T. Kirk, of course, would have been like a trademark Star Trek
thing. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to go back now, if I could, and play a little bit from one of those T.J. Kirk records. Let's give the listeners a taste, and we'll come right back. That is the music of Charlie Hunter on guitar, playing with T.J. Kirk way back in the day. He will be performing here in Tulsa Saturday night, the 10th of November, at Duet Jazz Club, the new jazz club in downtown Tulsa. That's Saturday night at 8 p.m. More information at duetjazz.com. Charlie Hunter, I so appreciate the groove in your music, but you've also got a real head for tunes. You're a fine composer. I really appreciate how much you bring to the music compositionally. Talk about how you write music. Are you one who just has to sit down alone when you get the moment and figure it out, or is it more of a jam kind of feel it as you go along process?
I guess it just depends on wherever I'm at the moment. I don't know. I think I wrote about 200 tunes, and maybe 10 of them are worth listening to a couple times, you know. But what are you going to do? We can't all be Thelonious Monk, you know.
Right. Humor is a big part of what you do. It comes through in your album titles. It comes through, I think, in your music. There's a certain, there's fun. There's fun in your music. It's a fun-loving experience listening to your music.
Oh, well, thank you.
And I was remembering...
I mean, I think I tried to do that.
And you put out an album a couple of years ago called Everybody Has a Plan Until They Get Punched in the Mouth. And
Right.
That's a wonderful title. It's funny. And
Mike Tyson.
Okay. Yeah, I read that.
Yeah,
that is a Mike Tyson quote. Yeah. I thought it might have been like a Marx Brothers quote or whatever. But how did you...
Oh, that sounds good.
How did you come across this Mike Tyson quote?
Oh, you know, I mean, I thought everybody knew that he said that. I don't know. I always remember things people say. And all the titles on the record are quotes.
Oh, really? Oh,
said, like... stuck in my head.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a song on there called Latin for Travelers that I really like.
And yeah, that's Bobby Preston.
Okay. Yeah. Now, that's a quartet, and they're mainly sort of New York progressive jazz players. Talk about that group, if you could. We'll play a cut, from that album.
Sure. I mean, well, Bobby Previtt and I go back about, it's almost 20 years now, and he's been a real influence on how I think about playing and improvising. It's been a great teacher for me, and you know, through the years, we just have a great hookup too. You know, he's just one of the few people that can really groove, but also is, you know, an incredible composer and improviser. And then Curtis Folks, we've been playing about the same amount of time.
Trombone
and,
player.
Yeah, he just is one of my favorite musicians, you know, just the feel and the narrative that he brings. And then Kirk Konufke is one of my favorite kind of brass players out there playing the cornet. And he's really just got some special stuff going on. And you know, so basically wanted to get those guys and kind of make a quote unquote blues record, my version of what a blues record was. And, you know, unfortunately, we could not get one gig with that band, like not a single gig.
Really?
So I don't know why. I mean, you know, maybe people don't like people over 40 years old, or I don't know what the deal was, but I'm just like, man, I got Bobby Previtt, Curtis Folks.
Yeah, man, it's
I got this Kirk Konufke coming up and give me a gig, somebody.
Wow.
But no, it didn't work out, which is too bad because I do really think that's a pretty good record.
It's a really strong record. I want to play a cut from it now, but it's funny you mentioned that idea about your take on the blues because, you know, now that I think about it, the phrase, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, that's sort of a paraphrase of the blues idea right there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, let's hear Who Put You Behind the Wheel. That is the music of Charlie Hunter on guitar, the album called Everybody Has a Plan Until They Get Punched in the Mouth. We heard Who Put You Behind the Wheel. Is there a story behind this song, other than the fact that that's a quote, that title?
Not really. I can't even remember. I've been playing it for a couple of years now, and I think maybe now I have to stop playing it.
All right. Well, another album of yours that I liked, I got this at the show you played in Tulsa a few years ago. You were with Scott on drums, Scott Amendola.
Yeah.
And this is an album called Public Domain. It's a solo guitar record. And, of course, all the songs are in the public domain, songs like Limehouse Blues, Danny Boy, Indiana. You know, we were talking earlier about how you have this way of playing the guitar where, to my ears, it sounds like you're playing lead guitar and bass guitar, or maybe playing the guitar part and the organ part on some recordings, and it's all you. You're doing everything on this amazing modified guitar of yours, but it comes through in this solo record, I think. What should we share from this recording?
I think the tune people like on that is the Low Bridge song.
Okay. Oh, Erie Canal.
Because it's just harmonics, really. I don't think I actually physically play the, you know, push down on any strings on it. And that I think that one probably is a cool one.
We'll give folks a taste of that, and you're listening to Studio Tulsa on Public Radio 89.5. Thank you. That is the music of Charlie Hunter on guitar. The solo guitar album is called Public Domain, and we heard a bit of Erie Canal, the Low Bridge song.
Yeah.
You're playing here in Tulsa, Charlie Hunter, on Saturday night, the 10th, at 8 p.m. at Duet Jazz Club, this great new jazz club we have downtown. Tell me about who you'll be playing with.
Well, I have Keita Ogawa, who's playing kind of a modified drum/percussion setup, and Kate is just a really fantastic musician, and people have really kind of slept on his ability to groove his butt off and also be incredibly creative at the same time. You know, sonically, that guy's like he's fantastic, and I always enjoy it when we get to play because he's so busy, we don't get to work together that often.
He works with Snarky Puppy, right? I mean, that's how I know that name.
A lot, yeah, and a group called Bocante, and bunch of other people.
Okay.
But also we have a Tulsa native singing with us.
Wow.
Dara Tucker, she's been in Nashville for a while, but she grew up in Tulsa.
Right. And, comes out of a gospel background, I think.
She does. But, you know, her story doesn't really end there. She's been in Nashville for 15, 16 years now, writing songs and, you know, doing a bunch of jazz stuff. And, you know, she's got a lot of interesting history and avenues that she's gone down with her sound, and she brings a really cool sensibility to this group.
I was interested to see that you were playing with her because I remember on an album she did a few years ago, you had a guest spot on that. You played on a couple of tracks.
Yeah, with Derek, buddy Derek.
Yeah.
Phillips.
Do you do a lot of work as a producer? I played something on my jazz show the other night by a tenor player, I think actually from Indianapolis.
Was it Rob?
Rob Dixon.
Rob Dixon.
And you play on that album, but you also produced it.
Yeah.
Do you get to do a lot of work as a producer?
Work is in quotes, I guess. but I have been a quote-unquote producer on a few things. My friend Rob, you know, he's played with me a bunch, and I just loved his sound and the soulfulness that he brings. And, you know, I just always felt like he never really got a fair shake in terms of like making a record that would really get people to listen to him and open some doors for him. So, you know, we were talking about it, and I said, well, Rob, why don't I just quote unquote produce the record? I'll play on it. We'll get Mike Clark to play on it, and we'll make a really funky record with some killer shuffles. And I think we did that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Clark, one of the great funk drummers.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, just drummers in general. I mean, before he created that funk thing that he's known for, he was playing blues shuffles with Jimmy Reed and jazz with, you know, bebop guys, too.
Right.
So, but yeah, I did that record. And then I actually just did produce Dara, her record in Nashville. And her husband, Greg Bryant, is actually a great electric bass player. So I just played six string guitar on that. We just finished it like 2 weeks ago.
So, oh, great, great.
Some pretty funky stuff on there, wide variety of cool songs that Dara wrote. Dara wrote everything on there. That's what makes it so cool. And I did also produced a record on this young woman from Mexico named Silvana Estrada. And we were supposed to tour it in the country, but she was denied a visa to tour here a couple times. So that put me in a trick bag where, you know, that's what got me started playing with these different singers. I've been touring a lot with Lucy Woodward, who's a great singer. And we're actually going to make a record in a couple weeks with Lucy, myself, and Derek Phillips. So watch out for that.
When I was really getting into your music in the late 90s, early 2000s, you've probably heard this from many folks, but your wonderful album, Songs from the Analog Playground, was the first time I ever heard Nora Jones.
Oh, yeah.
I think that she was one of the vocalists on that great album before she was Nora Jones, before she sort of hit it, right?
Yeah, she was. You know, and we toured a bunch with that record. And she was so sweet. And every time, whenever I see her, which is very rare, we travel in quite different circles, as you would imagine. my circles have many less zeros, or on the all the circle I travel in, the zeros are on the wrong side of the decimal.
No, I get
point.
It.
Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no, you knew her when, right?
Yeah, but she really is a sweet lady, and you know, it was fun to play with her. She was just a kid; she was really young, you know,
right?
And but it was a blast.
Yeah, well, it's cool to see that you're doing more work with vocalists now. That's something that you haven't done in recent years as much, correct?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I really love it because I just like to groove and have an audience have a good time, you know, and
yeah.
Doing that with the singer is pretty fun, man, you know.
Yeah.
Having a group with a singer, it's a lot of doors open for you, you know. I played instrumental music my whole life, you know, it's kind of the metaphoric equivalent of like looking for an apartment in New York City with a few dogs, you know, you're automatically going to not be in the running for 90% of the gigs.
Your choices are limited.
Yeah, severely, extremely, you know.
Well, thank you so much for your music. Like I said, I've really been a fan since the 90s and still am in a big way. And thanks for joining us on this program.
Thanks for having me, man.
That is guitarist Charlie Hunter, who will be fronting a trio this coming Saturday night, the 10th, at Duet Jazz Club in downtown Tulsa, starting at 8 p.m. You can get more information, including ticket details, at duetjazz.com, as we leave you with a bit of that Norah Jones-Charlie Hunter collaboration that we were talking about from the 2001 album called Songs from the Analog Playground, released before Norah Jones put out that breakthrough record called Come Away With Me. In fact, just before she put that record out. This is a Roxy Music Tune. I'm Scott Gregory, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening to Studio Tulsa.